And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, December 10th, 2010 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And it's time, of course, for the Federal News Countdown. Two experts in the world of the federal government joining me for the countdown today. Happy to welcome to the program Dan Chenick, Senior Fellow at the IBM Center for the Business of Government. Nice to see you, Dan.
Thanks, Francis. Good to be here.
You were at the White House yesterday for the IT reform event that we played in the first hour of the program, and we'll talk about that a little bit later on in the countdown. It's good to see you. Thanks for coming today. I'm glad you made it through the snow.
Thank you very much. It was a real challenge.
The horrible snowstorm that we had. And another person who muddled through the snow to get to the stage today is Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council. It's great to see you, Alan.
Francis, thank you.
Happy to have you. And you didn't wear the snowshoes this time.
No, I dodged the snowflake on the way in, though.
Okay, good for you. Glad that you're here and ready to count down the three most important federal news stories of the week. And we'll start, of course, with
number three.
Alan, your story number three in the countdown is headlined, Pentagon's Purchasers Get Their Own Video Games. And this is a story about the Defense Acquisition University's video games. Alicia Sanchez, who's mentioned in this story, was on the Dorabeck Insider earlier in the week, and you can hear Chris's conversation with her at federalnewsradio.com/Dorabeck Insider. This is a pretty cool and I think a pretty smart way to convey this information, get people to understand what's going on in this process.
It is, and I compliment DAU and Alicia for the work that they're doing. I mean, I chose it as my number three because it shows the challenges that the federal workforce has, and frankly, the challenges that the contractor workforce has in attracting and retaining the new millennials, the new workers into the workforce, and particularly in the acquisition world where it's rules-based. So many of the workers are used to playing games. They've mm-hmm. grown up their life in these computers, and so we have to adapt to a new way of learning. And I thought this article sort of captured that. It's a little fun. It's a little different. But it shows the steps that agencies need to take.
You know, in a prior life, I had the opportunity to be the voice of a game like this. It was a training game. And it's really intriguing the process that goes into these, all of the components, all of the elements that go into making these, because you really have to plan for any potential scenario that somebody answers, and at the same time convey the information that's necessary for the person to have when you're done with the thing.
Very important, and the modeling and simulation area of federal work is growing and growing. We've had that community a lot. But more and more, whether it's the military or the contractor community, they're using these alternative methods of teaching.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff, and the story's posted already at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth under the headline, Pentagon Purchasers Get Their Own Video Games. It's Alan Shvatkin's story for the number three most important federal news story of the week. It's from wired.com, and it's linked up there. Dan Chenick, your story number three is directly from the Federal Trade Commission, and it's headlined, FTC staff issues privacy report offers framework for consumers, businesses, and policymakers. And privacy is a big concern at every agency with the information that's being pushed out, especially through open government type initiatives. What did you find about this that was so important?
So this was one of two reports that the administration is releasing toward the end of the year, the other one coming from the Commerce Department shortly. And it really shows that there still is focus and interest in the privacy issue, even as the administration comes out with other types of cybersecurity or technology reform activities. And that has two flavors. The FTC report shows the interest in terms of how the government regulates interactions with consumers. And to some extent, that'll affect government agencies because consumers, are, as citizens, interact with the government as well. It also shows, and part of the FTC report was something that people may have heard of called the Do Not Track List.
Mm-hmm.
So most of us are familiar with the Do Not Call List so that you don't have telephone companies calling you up or companies calling on the phone and soliciting. This would be a list that would say that companies can't track your internet movements over the web. And about 11 years ago, it was when the then White House worked with a company to track user behavior to try to get messaging more focused for young individuals who mm-hmm. were potential drug users. And mm-hmm. the Office of National Drug Control Policy tried to use that as a way to improve their messaging. And there was a great privacy outcry, which then led to the cookies policy that carried over several administrations. This report shows that the government's trying to think ahead, and I think will engender a lot of interest in conversation.
Do you see any potential change to that, that cookie policy? Because there have been, in all the conversation about it, there have been any number of potentially potential benefits to citizens by government agencies being able to direct messages, as you talk about, along with maybe some of the challenges that originally brought the policy about.
I think that's right. And I think it's a matter of, does the consumer or does the citizen interacting with the government have the option or not, and have the choice or not? And if the current cookie policy has gone through some revision in this administration, thanks to the efforts of OMB through Cass Sunstein's office and also Vivek Kundra and his office, and those efforts in the federal space, I think, are being replicated across potentially in the commercial space, especially to balance sort of the good user experience for people who opt in. To responsible companies, it's sort of a good housekeeping seal of approval if you've got a good process, to people who really don't want those companies to keep sending messages and calling and that sort of thing.
Dan Chenick, story number three is from the Federal Trade Commission website, FTC Staff Issues Privacy Report. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. All of the stories that we're counting down on the program this week are there. And when we come back, more on the open government field, Dan Chenick, story number two on the Federal News Countdown. We'll also hear Alan Shvatkin's number two story when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues. It's the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
Lingering concerns about Iran's nuclear ambitions and al-Qaeda-linked terrorists plotting against the West in Yemen are at the top of the list of concerns for Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. He expressed those concerns during remarks at the U.S. Embassy in Kabul and then later in Abu Dhabi. He said the U.S. must be willing to do more financially, diplomatically, and economically for countries that have problems before they erupt and trigger military action. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the frustration of trying to repair a $1 million piece of equipment, only to discover the part you need cannot be found anywhere because the manufacturer no longer exists? At Arink, they have the ability to recreate the most complicated part down to its smallest component, keeping that expensive piece of equipment running as if it was brand new. For more information, log on to www.arink.com.
I'd say most people know that they could save 15% or more on their car insurance by switching to GEICO. Helping people save money, it's what I do. And quite frankly, it's something that GEICO's been doing for over 70 years. But here's the really good part. GEICO is actually a shorthand term for Government Employees Insurance Company. So yeah, GEICO and the government employees, we go way back. Which is why, if you're a federal employee, you could save even more money on top of GEICO's already low rates. And the news just gets better. GEICO's got an impressive 97% customer satisfaction rate. So you get some of the best service this side of the Potomac, and you get to save hundreds at the same time. Win-win, my friend. Oh, I've got to run, but I'll let my friend Mike fill you in on the rest. All yours, mate.
Thank you, my little green friend. Hey, it's Mike Causey. If you're a federal employee, then I've got some good news for you. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com and see how much you could save.
The latest from the Federal Security Spotlight brought to you by Cisco.
New metrics for cybersecurity can apply to whatever kind of system you're running. Here's Steve Pallero, Chief Technology Officer of the Center for Internet Security.
We've designed them to be agnostic of particular technologies. For example, change management, configuration management, vulnerabilities, patches, and so forth. They could be applied to discrete individual systems as well as virtualized systems and cloud computing environments.
To hear the entire show, log on to Federal News newsradio.com. Will the top-of-mind security issues of today be the issues facing government tomorrow? Get the latest from federal experts on FISMA reform, the cyber initiative, how government is combating botnets, spyware, and other cyber evils, and more. Listen to Federal Security Spotlight, sponsored by Cisco, airing Thursday from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Security Spotlight is brought to you by Cisco, the leader in federal IT security.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. The telework bill, now law. President Obama signed the bill yesterday. What impact can telework actually have? Does telework impact job satisfaction? How about work-life balance? We're going to talk to a professor who has actually studied those issues. And we'll continue looking at the stories that shaped 2010. Today, what is the big Gov 2.0 story of the year? We'll tell you this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. This week with Dan Chenick from the IBM Center for the Business of Government and Alan Shvatkin from the Professional Services Council. And we're up to
number two.
Dan Chenick's story number two is from NextGov. The headline is Viewpoint. Happy birthday, Open Government Directive by Carol Lukensmeyer and Patrice McDermott, also guests on the Dorabeck Insider this week. And Open Government is about a year old, and it is it's kind of a mixed bag of what we've gotten in that year, isn't it?
Well, I would say that it's a progressing set of activities.
Mm-hmm.
It's the day the president took office, he issued the predecessor memorandum to the Open Government Directive, which called for the directive to be issued. And the administration, from the time the president campaigned, was very much advocating this as a new way for the government to do business. And I think a lot of the activity that you've seen over the last couple of years shows that the government really is a different place mm-hmm. than it was before. You only need to look at things like the General Services Administration's recent announcement of their social media platform, where you can basically go to one portal and get access to all the government's social media, to something new coming out of GSA called the expertnet.gov, which they're taking comment on, where they're looking at using channels of the internet to get expert opinions into the government.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the story shows that we do live in a different and evolving world, not one that we can really put the open government genie back in the bottle, but one that there's still a number of challenges and opportunities ahead. A couple of those are, one is security, and the juxtaposition, both real and perceived, mm-hmm. of if you open up information, how do you keep it secure? And I think that there's more attention that needs to be focused on that. And then another one is really collaboration. So open government is great, allows people to see, mm-hmm. but can they really interact? And that's one of the things the story that really talked about was to get government decision-making and policy-making to change in a real way thanks to the input of citizens.
Mm-hmm. Collaboration, Alan, is one area that impacts the community that you work with, the contracting community, and Martha Johnson's talked about it a lot. Dan Gordon mentioned it yesterday at the event at the White House. What's the impact of some of these things on that community?
Well, and it's very important. I think Dan raises the twin challenges of both open government and transparency, yet properly protecting national security mm-hmm. and sensitive information or company proprietary information. So the counterpart of the WikiLeaks and other concerns about data being out, and it's not just data that's marked for national security information, but connecting the dots. The Department of Homeland Security and other law enforcement agencies are very concerned, and properly so, about the volume of data and what good data mining can learn about federal government activities or private sector activities. And so transparency comes with a price.
Mm-hmm.
It is not just a dollar sign, but some challenges about managing that information.
Mm-hmm. Now, as this, what will we see if we look at this, do you think, a year from now, 2 years from now, as progress continues to be made on the Open Government Directive? What do you see in the future?
So I think that the government and the citizens that interact with the government in various ways will be better at making the risk calculation that Alan raises. So there's risk in everything. There's risk when we go outside and cross the street. And there's risk in putting information out on the web and learning how to balance that against the protections that you need to include is something that the government is getting better at. And so I think you'll see a more mature, more balanced set of activities. You may see one or two incidents that are caused because of open government that sort of have a reaction backwards. But I don't think it'll cause the train to go off the track. I just think it may slow things down a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, I think you'll see a more mature and better balanced calculus from the government.
Carolyn Lukensmeyer and Patrice McDermott write, still in our experience, many people find it difficult to identify, find, and use basic types of information about government activities and have their voices heard by officials before decisions are made. Is there a point, do you think, Alan, where there could potentially be too much of that, where there's so much commenting and opinion-seeking going on that it's hard to actually get the work done?
Absolutely. I mean, the old saw about where do you hide an elephant in a herd of elephants, and we do. It's hard to differentiate the important from the unimportant, the significant from the insignificant, and simple data dumps or opening vast scores of information to the public. I'm all for that. To the extent that the government is doing things, there ought to be a bias towards transparency. But I don't think we're facilitating decision making. I don't think we're facilitating citizen involvement.
Mm-hmm. Dan, do you think there's a danger?
Well, I think
that
there's a way to use technology to help cut through a lot of the noise. And as Alan said, I think that it's important to err on the side of transparency, but also with a view to using the tools of analysis to say, all right, how can we help government make better decisions, and how can that process help citizens understand government and accept those decisions more properly.
Dan Chenick, story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week is from nextgov.com. The headline is Happy Birthday Open Government Directive by Carol Lukensmeyer and Patrice McDermott. You can find it at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Shvatkin's story number two is somewhat in the collaboration vein, and we'll hear about that next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose.
NBC News Radio, I'm Ron Allen. In Salt Lake City, a federal jury has rejected an insanity plea and convicted a former street preacher of kidnapping Elizabeth Smart 8 years ago. NBC's Kristen Welker is at the courthouse.
This means that Brian David Mitchell will likely spend a very long time, if not the rest of his life, in prison. Of course, the sentencing date will be scheduled for another period of time.
Smart was 14 years old when she was taken from her home at knife point, sexually abused, and held captive for 9 months back in 2002. President Obama predicts congressional approval of the tax-cutting compromise he has reached with Republican leaders, but he's not ruling out that unhappy House Democrats will make some changes in the legislation. And Americans are slowly recovering from the Great Recession. Household net worth was up 2.2% over the summer months. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Ron Allen, NBC News Radio.
Right now at the Home Depot, get a free Ryobi power tool worth up to $99 when you buy a Ryobi Super Combo Kit or a Lithium Ion Combo Kit. Select that free tool from a wide range of power tools and make two of the people on your list happy, or one of them very happy. We're lowering the cost of an extra package under the tree with a free power tool when you buy a Ryobi Super Combo Kit. More saving, more doing. That's the power of the Home Depot. Valid through December 29th, U.S. only. See store for details.
Save on holiday gifts for everyone on your list this Friday and Saturday at JCPenney. Get in early Saturday for 7-hour steals, 6 a.m. to 1 p.m. Surprise her with sparkling gold jewelry 70% off. Women's wool coats just $59.99 and save 60% on men's and kids' coats. Plus, spend more, earn more with JCP Cash. That's $10, $15, or $20 off. Unlike other stores, we don't make you come back to save. Shop JCP.com, JCPenney. Sephora inside JCPenney, not participating. Other exclusions apply. Offers end December 11th.
Government personnel must continue to achieve mission-critical objectives no matter their work environment.
Video conferencing technologies provide a highly effective collaboration solution for federal employees affected by budget cuts, BRAC initiatives, and telework mandates if they are secure based on open standards and deployable in limited bandwidth environments. Polycom is the first video provider to have an ultimate HD portfolio that is JITC certified, offering real-time face-to-face communication without compromising secure networks or consuming excessive bandwidth. Polycom enables government customers to collaborate over voice and video anywhere, anytime, securely both inside and outside the firewall, offering high-definition video calls at half the bandwidth of other companies. To learn more, visit polycom.com/federal.
The Telework Center arms you with all the information you need to know about teleworking in the federal government. Go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword Polycom.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power, Dell, and AVU Technologies. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Football's back at RFK Stadium with the Military Bowl, presented by Northrop Grumman. It's hometown Maryland versus East Carolina on December 29th. It's a high-powered offensive showdown in the nation's capital, all for the benefit of the USO. Don't miss this explosive college football action at RFK as D.C. hosts East Carolina and Maryland December 29th. Tickets on sale now at all Ticketmaster locations or visit militarybowl.org.
Without an effective estate plan, your hard-earned wealth will end up in the hands of the government, and a will is no protection. At Zell Law, our estate planning lawyers take the time to listen and understand you and your goals and figure out what you want to achieve. Then we work with you to create a customized estate plan that helps you and your family realize your dreams of wealth and freedom. Find out how we do this by joining me, Wayne Zell, Saturdays at 10 a.m. for Blueprint for Wealth on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio.
Profile America, Friday, December 10th. With Christmas Eve just 2 weeks away, the nation's retail stores certainly will be crowded for the weekend as shoppers get into high gear to check off the names on their gift list. It's a time for goodwill and patience on the part of all concerned. In our rush, we may overlook the good work of the salespeople who staff the country's 1.1 million retail businesses, ranging from furniture to auto parts to sporting goods, and without whom shopping would be impossible. Whether part-time or career, there are close to 16 million employees staffing these businesses, most of them sharing their expertise and providing service with a smile. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Plan now to attend a firm's December 16th luncheon to discuss how federal agencies are in a race to the finish line to implement Internet Protocol Version 6, learn how to comply with the administration's mandate, and hear from key government officials leading the charge. That's December 16th at 11:30 a.m. at the Hamilton Crown Hotel in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown this week with Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and Dan Chenick of the IBM Center for the Business of Government. And Alan, your story number two is from Federal Computer Week, and it's headlined, Agencies Don't Fear Talks with Contractors. The sentiments in that headline of Dan Gordon, the Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, and we heard from him briefly in the first hour of the program as we listened to highlights of the IT reform event at the White House. And that's what this story is about, the comments that he made that Chris Dorbeck actually talked about him repeating this morning. These agencies don't have to be afraid to talk to the vendors before they get it to the process, and even after the process begins. And that seems to be a myth that's hard to get rid of.
And not only don't they have to, do we not want to preclude them, we want to affirmatively encourage them to do that. There are any number of legal, appropriate, and not job-threatening ways for that communication to take place. And if government wants the value out of the products and services that it's buying, there has to be a clear set of communications. And quite honestly, the RFP documents and the contract documents don't do that. So I think this the importance of collaboration, really an emerging area. I compliment Dan for taking that on. We'll see more from him next year about that. PSC did a study earlier this year in conjunction with Grant Thornton, our acquisition policy survey, and the number one complaint was actually the lack of communication between the operational contracting community and the oversight community within government. It's ironic. In June, the Deputy Secretary of Defense had to issue a memo to the defense community saying it's okay to communicate with industry. Glad to see that. Sorry state of affairs that people believe that there are legitimate barriers, but that no communication is the right communication.
Where do you think that has come from? I mean, what's the history of that lack of communication between the vendors and the...
I think some of it has come out of the fear of protest. Some of it has come from the oversight, audit and oversight community as well. Some of it from a gotcha mentality in this around some of these issues. But the better programs, the underpinning of the IT reform is better collaboration, better understanding of mission needs and outcomes to be achieved. And so I think we've just built a set of fears around the mythology and not enough guidance and support behind the people who are taking those taking those issues to task.
And I would also add that the legalistic nature of the discussions runs counter to our last conversation around open government and collaborative government. So when you get into a situation where ethics officers and lawyers are interpreting, or inspectors general are interpreting things in a particular way that can be enforced, it countermines the discussion that was had yesterday that Dan Gordon properly talked about, not just talking to procurement officials, but talking to the ethics officials and general's counsels across the agencies.
Is there a workable way that transparency, that some of the things that we talked about open government can be applied in this case, where if I'm the agency and I'm having discussions with your company, Alan, that some level of that can be disclosed so that Dan's company theoretically could know what's going on? Certainly not in a case where any proprietary information would be revealed or any information that is owned by, you know, any IP issues. But there's got to be some way that can be structured so that then if you get the job, that he doesn't feel compelled to protest just on the fact that he didn't know what was going on.
I think we're working that way. Many of the processes that we have today are almost preclude that kind of information sharing broadly. And so the fear is, or the antithesis is, many government officials say, well, if I can't say the same exact thing to everybody, I won't say anything to anybody. And I think that's part of the mythology that we're trying to overcome. Technology will help. Broad industry sessions help. Routine communications help.
This ties into the project management issues that agencies are having, too, because, Dan, just about every person that represents a company that sits in that chair for my Industry Chatter series on Thursday says the biggest problem they have with project management is the agencies don't really know, because they're not talking to the vendors, what's even possible for the solutions that they need. They get halfway into a project and the vendor says, oh, by the way, we can make it do this too. And that's how you, then when you start doing that, you wind up with projects that are way off track.
And that covers both sides. Just on the government, there needs to be greater communication within the programmatic and the contract community. On the industry side, there needs to be greater discussions between the design teams, if you will, and the teams that actually write the RFPs and work the numbers and that sort of thing. So there's collaboration, improved collaboration that could happen on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
To your point earlier, one of the interesting announcements that came out yesterday to support this was the idea of a portal that mm-hmm. GSA would have that would be a level playing field, if you will, to create some transparency for these kinds of conversations. And I think that was an excellent recommendation.
Yeah, that seems to make a lot of sense, where companies would have access to that and pretty much everybody would know what everybody else is getting from the agency and have the same information like you were talking about, Alan.
Absolutely. And yet I came across many large programs run those portals. All of the documents are posted up there for anybody to see at any time. And then we came across a memorandum from a Navy facility out in the Pacific that said they would only meet with contractors once every 6 months for 30 minutes. We can notice in advance for a week a list of all the people are going to come and all the issues to be described, whether it was for social issues or contract issues.
Mm.
Once every 30 minutes, once every 6 months. Not, in our view, the right way to be doing business.
It's not as transparent as you would like to imagine, I suppose. This story in FCW says, in January, OFPP plans to issue a memo identifying several major myths and the related facts and strategies to get past those myths. Along with the memo, OFPP is planning to have online video channels by mid-2011 that offer Q&A forums regarding these concerns, and the Federal Acquisition Institute will host a webinar in late January. Is that enough, do you think?
No, it's a start, and maybe Alicia can put a game together, a video game together to help train as well. But anything that starts to attack the mythology is a good thing.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Dan? What would effectively get agencies to understand what they can and can't do?
I agree with Alan. It's a start. I do think that you can't underestimate the importance of getting the legal community, the ethics community, and the procurement community on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
I think more than anything else, that message, because if it's just Dan Gordon's office that's providing the message, at the implementation stage, there are still going to be discussions within agencies where there are attorneys who are going to be making statements that, as Dan said yesterday, aren't required by the law, but are basically falling back on the comfortable restrictions that they've been enforcing
mm-hmm.
for several years. And I think that's a key discussion.
Yeah, so breaking out of the idea of, yes, we can do it, but it's easier if we don't, it seems to be the key issue here.
Creating, yes, we can do it, and here's how.
Yeah, yeah. Facilitating that. Is this something that I think that you think will be quick, or will take some time, will ever happen?
Yes, it certainly can. I mean, it takes place regularly among key programs. It takes place a lot in the post-award environment, contract administration, when you're not looking at the competitive landscape for future business, but how do you execute ongoing work? And so the program management of program manager relationships with existing contractors is often better communication. I'd like to see more of that in the pre-award contract formation side, not just in contract administration.
Yeah, that's something that Martha Johnson has talked about. I mean, just about every time I've heard her speak since she's taken over at GSA.
And
about
another
that very
point
issue.
That Alan referenced earlier, it creates better work for the government
mm-hmm.
and for the taxpayer.
Mm-hmm.
If the pre-award discussions are happening, the agency's writing better requirements, industry's writing better solutions because they don't have to guess at what the government really needs, and then when it gets time to actually deliver the solution, it's a better return.
And as I mentioned, that requirements thing is the thing that the vendors are telling me they're struggling with the most. Is that what your members are telling you, too?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Story number two for Alan Shvatkin on the Federal News Countdown this week is from Federal Computer Week. The headline, Agencies Don't Fear Talks with Contractors, and it's a rundown of some of the comments made by Dan Gordon at the White House yesterday. The major IT management overhaul there is still to be discussed at a little bit of length on the Federal News Countdown this week. Story number one from Dan Chenick and also from Alan Shvatkin when the Federal News Countdown continues in just a moment.
Don't miss the event of the season. Tickets for the Caps Care Casino Night and Auction are on sale now at WashingtonCaps.com. Enjoy an evening of gaming and mingling with Caps players and coaches, all in the name of charity. The second annual Caps Care Casino Night and Auction, Sunday, January 9th, 2011, at the Hilton Alexandria Mark Center. All proceeds benefit Washington Capitals Charities. Get your tickets now at WashingtonCaps.com.
Tune in to Fed Central, dedicated to sharing insights and best practices on topics ranging from cybersecurity to sustainability to healthcare reform. Hear straight talk from government leaders and industry specialists on the issues that are shaping how agencies serve their mission and their constituents. Hosted by veteran broadcaster Jane Norris, don't miss Fed Central on the third and fourth Wednesday of the month at 1 p.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Sponsored by Deloitte. Get the taste of Texas for half price at Austin Grill. Enjoy $30 worth of authentic Tex-Mex cuisine for only $15 at Austin Grill. Try some authentic Austin Grill favorites, including signature Austin wings, handmade enchiladas, sizzling fajitas, combo platters, and much more. Austin Grill serves lunch and dinner daily and a delicious weekend brunch. Only $15 gets you $30 to spend at Austin Grill. Buy your half-price gift certificate today at halfpricedc.com. Be kind, tell the truth, and eat good food. Austin Grill.
Newsmakers on the Dora Beck Insider.
Prashant Garg, the president of the American Council for Technology, the Obama administration's proposal to improve the management of government information technology.
We have the OMB and OFFP working together on this, and we will be communicating with them. I have not seen as much communication as I'm seeing right now in terms of literally emails saying, what do you think of this, and should we go this way? And that's great.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/DoraBeckInsider.
Thanks for listening to the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council and Dan Chenock of the IBM Center for the Business of Government are my experts, counting down the top federal news stories of the week. And of course, we're up to
number one.
And Dan Chenock, your most important federal news story of the week is Jason Miller's story on federalnewsradio.com. OMB plans 25-point IT reform, and it is an element of what Alan was talking about. Story number two is the same event that took place at the White House yesterday, and you heard highlights of it in hour number one of the show today, and I'll have the whole thing posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. What did you take away? You attended this event.
I did.
What did you take away as you walked out of the White House yesterday? What were some of the first thoughts that you that came to your mind about what Vivek was proposing?
So I think Vivek has led a very inclusive process. He's reached out to a number of industry groups for ideas, and the 25-point plan reflects many of the ideas that he heard from from those groups.
Mm-hmm.
Having participated in a number of those meetings, I think he was a very excellent leader of discussions and was attentive to the concerns raised and refined the plans appropriately. I think the plan is defined by its breadth. It has a lot of different pieces. I think it'll be a challenge for Vivek and OMB to manage that across the course of the next 18 months. But any of the individual pieces, they're both important and doable. So it's a matter of basically managing that portfolio of initiatives.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the press has picked up, the immediate press picked up on OMB stopping systems. And you've seen some of that in the aftermath of the announcement yesterday about a couple of the different systems that were discussed in the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important. I was at OMB for over 13 years and know that using the authority that OMB has is a way to get agencies to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think a couple of the important elements that are sort of longer term to focus on, one is the concept of program management as a career field. And that's been something that, for example, a group of current and former government officials that I've been involved in has been focused on and is now working with a couple of different agencies to bring forward. So it's great that OMB is now focusing on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Aligning incentives. We talked before about collaboration and talking across government.
Yeah.
Aligning incentives so that an integrated project team, the contract official, the program official, and the budget official or the technical lead all have a similar set of incentives.
Mm-hmm.
So those are two of the elements that I think are new and important coming out of this process.
Mm-hmm. The career track for IT project managers mm-hmm. reminds me of the same goals that the Pentagon's trying to set for acquisition professionals right. to say this is something you can go into and you can do this for your entire mm-hmm. career. And this is almost trying to give the noble profession endorsement mm-hmm. to it in a way. Alan, what do you think especially about the collaboration part that Dan talked about?
Well, it's really essential, and IT spending is such a significant element of the overall federal spending on services that it's right to focus on that element. It's heavily technology-focused. It's heavily high-end activities. And so I think one of the takeaways around this 25-point plan is that buying information technology for the federal government is not the same as buying weapon systems or buying commodities for some of the federal agencies, and it deserves a separate attention. It may need separate skill sets, and the recognition both from a process and a workforce skill set, I think, is a key takeaway message that I got from this this initiative.
Mm-hmm. As we focus on the people part of this, this workforce part of it, that's obviously very important. Some of those projects, as you talked about, Dan, will go away, and then the media focused on that a lot. Are you confident? You kind of mildly endorsed this 25-point plan. Do you think that if this plan's executed the way Vivek talked about it yesterday, and we look at the high risk list 3 years from now, we're going to see a big difference there?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that the plan has a lot of terrific elements, and I think it will be implemented and carried through over the next 18 months. And believe that at the end of that 18 months. Assuming that it's managed well and implemented well, the government will be in a different place and contracts and projects will be operated more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that came up during the discussion yesterday that I think Vivek was eloquent about in his response was the issue of cybersecurity running through all of the different initiatives. Because
mm-hmm.
although it wasn't brought out as a separate piece of the plan, it was indicated that this is a presidential priority and that cybersecurity is really being driven through all of the different pieces of the IT equation.
Mm-hmm. Dan Chenick's story number one on the Federal News Countdown. It's from Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. The headline is OMB Plans 25-Point IT Reform. It's posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Alan Shvatkin's story number one is our last remaining story in the Federal News Countdown this week. You'll hear it next and hear the discussion when In-Depth with Francis Rose continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arinc.
Lingering concerns about Iran's nuclear ambitions and al-Qaeda-linked terrorists plotting against the West in Yemen are at the top of the list of concerns for Secretary of Defense Robert Gates. He expressed those concerns during remarks at the U.S. Embassy in Kabul and then later in Abu Dhabi. He said the U.S. must be willing to do more financially, diplomatically, and economically for countries that have problems before they erupt and trigger military action. I'm J.J. Green.
Can you imagine the frustration of trying to repair a $1 million piece of equipment only to discover the part you need cannot be found anywhere because the manufacturer no longer exists? At Arinc, they have the ability to recreate the most complicated part down to its smallest component, keeping that expensive piece of equipment running as if it was brand new. For more information, log on to www.arinc.com.
Join host Michael Keegan next week for the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour. How can government cut costs and improve performance? How are disruptive innovations saving lives on the battlefield and expanding our presence in space? What is the U.S. Postal Service doing to reduce its carbon footprint? How are federal agencies becoming more transparent and open? And how are state and local governments doing more with less? Tune in to the Business of Government magazine next week and find out.
If you've been around Washington as long as I have, you know the one constant is change. The players change, laws change. If you're a federal retiree or soon to be one, you need to know that some of those changes could affect your retirement future. There's one association fighting to make sure that doesn't happen, and that's NARF, the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. If you work for or have worked for Uncle Sam, you need NARF. NARF is the only association that's dedicated to making sure your retirement is secure when you reach retirement. Don't wait until after you retire to join NARF. Check out their website at www.narfe.org. You'll see that NARF is a great investment for your retirement future. Then click on the Join Now button and join hundreds of thousands of federal retirees and employees as a NARF member. Or call them at 800-627-3394, 800-627-3394, and have them send you more information.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight for December is the Capital Area Food Bank. When is the last time you went to bed hungry? Right here in the Washington metro area, over 200,000 children are going to bed hungry each night. Help the Capital Area Food Bank make this holiday season special for children in need. For every dollar you donate, the food bank can provide 3 meals. For more information, visit federalnewsradio.com. And remember, hunger never takes a holiday.
We're back on the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The number one story of the week, the most important federal news story as selected by Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council, is Suzanne Kubota's story from federalnewsradio.com. Headline, DOD contractors facing grim realities. Defense contractors, investors, and senior DOD leaders gathered last week for the annual Credit Suisse Aviation Week conference in a harsh economic climate. And I guess this was probably not good news for defense contractors to hear, Alan, but probably not a big surprise either.
Not a big surprise. I mean, the fiscal challenges that the federal government faces are significant, and the options for dealing with it, as we've seen over the past couple of weeks, are there are lots of different options for getting them, but many of them have very tough choices. This is really just an opportunity to open the door to the discussion. It's not just in DOD. It's going to be in every civilian agency. While the pain may not be distributed evenly, it's hard to predict who will be affected most. The fact is, I think that the DOD idea of doing more with more is probably at some risk.
Mm-hmm.
The messaging that I'm hearing back is from the agencies, from the Congress, is really to do less with less.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my expectation. And so we're cautioning our members about how to position themselves in the future marketplace, assuming there's a marketplace.
Yeah. Well, there will always be a marketplace, of course. But as we look and see, I think the most apt comparison for the United States right now, what might potentially be happening in the future, is England. Senator Gregg said on CNBC a couple of weeks ago, we're Greece. And I know Senator Gregg's a lot more of an expert than I am about budget matters. I like to think and hope that we're not that far along, that we're not in that dire of a situation. But when you look at what the new coalition government in England is dealing with, they're doing 25% right off the top across the board and not being surgical. What I've heard everybody say so far is that is going to be critical for success with the way we do things, is to be surgical and evaluate as we're going instead of just saying right off the top. Dan, you're nodding your head in agreement with that.
I would agree. It's much harder in a political environment where you've got lots of different factors going into every line of the budget,
mm-hmm.
To do a line-by-line review that you carry through. It's easier to take a top-down, you know, here's the level. It's essentially, you know, do you cut the top line,
mm-hmm.
or do you try to do a bottoms-up program-by-program review? The latter, the program-by-program review, is probably better, more tailored, gets better results. It's much harder to do.
Yeah. Are we encouraged at all by the fact that the tax deal was made this week, and it does seem to be a deal where the president agreed to some things that he didn't like in exchange for some things that he really wanted, and Republicans in Congress took some things that they didn't really like in exchange for some things that they thought were important? That seems to have been lacking the last however long I can remember. But these compromises where people give something they don't like for something that they do like seems to be what's going to have to happen for these kinds of things to get done later on.
And it has to happen across the board. I don't know whether that tax deal that the president and some of the Republicans made will stick. I mean, the House rejected that plan yesterday, for example. The Senate may pass that plan over the weekend. I think it is an indication, though, of the degree of difficulty that we face as policymakers face, that we as a country face in addressing the fiscal challenges that we have. And so there's clearly some grim realities ahead, not only for DOD contractors, but for DOD, for all of the federal agencies and all of us as Americans, quite honestly.
Mm-hmm. This your story number one, Alan, from federalnewsradio.com, it's quotes from Jim McAleese in a conversation that he had with the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris this week. And McAleese said, a clear understanding that we need to share in the contribution to repair the deficit along with entitled reform. That's even different. I mean, he's talking about this reflection of leadership at the Pentagon, the attendees at this event, Undersecretary Ash Carter, Vice Chair of the Joint Chiefs, James Cartwright, Defense Comptroller Robert Hale. For a long time, it was hard to find people at that level at the Pentagon who were willing to go along with this idea. So the fact that Secretary Gates and Deputy Secretary Lynn and Ash Carter mentioned here, that's a kind of 180 degrees, isn't it?
Well, it is, and it's a slight shift from the position they had just several months ago with a lot of the Gates initiatives. The Secretary is absolutely right to be looking internally for efficiencies. I think the reality now is, the grim reality, the aftermath is that that's not enough, and it's got to be more than just DOD and more than just efficiencies.
Where will it have to come from? Where will the leadership have to come from for that surgical bottom-up type review that you said, Dan, is much more difficult? Is that the president's responsibility, or is that one of the leaders in Senate or Speaker, Minority Leader in the House?
Yes. and the interesting thing about the tax deal in terms of its implications for other types of initiatives like the one that Alan raised in the article going forward, is you do need to have that we'll give something if you'll give something view that you talked about before. Once that view is articulated, then at the working level, people can say, we know that our senior leaders are expecting us to get something done, that they're not basically asking us to stand behind a particular set of activities that aren't going to be able to be achieved when the final bill gets negotiated at the senior level. And mm-hmm. So it does create a better frame for those types of working level discussions.
Yeah. A terrific Federal News Countdown, as always, when you guys are involved. Dan Chenick of the IBM Center for the Business of Government, Alan Shvatkin of the Professional Services Council, great stories and a great conversation, as always. And the stories are posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we also have the audio of our conversation will be posted shortly on the website. The Dorbeck Insider is up next, and a brand new in-depth with Francis Rose on Monday between 1 and 3. And, of course, the Federal News Countdown returns next Friday at 2 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.